Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Oh, we're going to get you ready for the Canadiens-Tampa Bay Lightning game tonight. Happy 70th birthday to Eric Clapton. Along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick with you, David Trentadue helping us out. We'll go to the Bell Center in about 30 minutes. Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times will be on site. A little bit more talk about the Lightning. John Cooper, welcome back again.
It's something we've definitely talked about in the room. Did we expect that we'd be 4-0 against them right now at the beginning of the year? Probably not, but now we are. And to be able to run the table on them would be a lot of fun.
We know this is a huge challenge. This is a good hockey team. They've got some great players. So, but we got to focus the way we wanted to play the game. And I'm convinced our team's going to be ready.
Lay down, I rest here in my arms.
Pierre McGuire on TSN 690 is brought to you in part by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads. Bite into Dagwood's fully loaded, fabulous new oven-grilled beef and pepperoni sandwiches. Dagwood's delicious.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Mitch. Clearly, the meter is running. Eric Clapton is 70.
I know. It's another one of those.
My
yeah. But thankfully, he sounds and looks great. He's got one more series of concerts he's going to do in your neighborhood at MSG, and then that's it. He said he's had enough of the road.
Well, either way, he does look great. He does sound great. But, man, oh, man, when you hear that number, you're like, really?
I know.
Oh, my God.
I had that moment when Springsteen turned 60.
Yeah, I could see that, too. Yeah. I definitely could see that, too. No question.
So, Pierre, we're having a discussion here on the on how meaningful this particular game is tonight, especially for the Canadians, in light of what you just heard. John Cooper talking about how much fun it would be if they were able to go 5-0 against the Canadians after what happened last spring. Canadians had a lot of trouble against Tampa a year ago, and then without Ben Bishop and a less-than-healthy Steven Stamkos swept them in the playoffs. How significant is this matchup from the Canadians' perspective, do you think?
Not that much. It's more about just confidence and doing things the way you want to in your system to be ready for a high-caliber opponent, which Tampa is. It doesn't mean much. It really doesn't. I wouldn't overhype this. And this is not coach speak. This is just reality speak. The reality is that doesn't really matter. You're going to eventually have to face them at some point. So the reference point won't be the fact that they went 4-1 on you. The reference point will be how did we play against them? How tight were the games? And how did we play in the last game? That's really what it's about. The end result really doesn't matter as much. If it was for two teams vying to make the playoffs, it would be different. Both these teams obviously will be in the playoffs. One's already clinched. So I wouldn't put too much into it, really. I wouldn't be that worried about it.
So Gallo is in agreement with you. Rod and I believe, from a Canadiens perspective, they need more of...
We definitely have to kind of pick up our game a little bit against them, for sure. We haven't played our best hockey against them, and we got to get just a little more hungry out there, have a little more edge to our game.
That's what I expect to see from the Canadiens tonight, a little bit more of a little more bite, I think.
Well, that's fine. Again, you may have the more bite, but you may not win it. But that's okay. That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't be, and I kind of like what Michel said, I know our guys will be ready. That's what you want to hear from him, rather than, this is win or lose. We got to win. We can't lose. That's not how you do it at this time. The other thing is, again, to be fair, this is not a total Tampa team.
I'm sorry.
Jason Garrison's a very important part of this team. And he won't be there for at least a month.
Well,
after the Advocator hit.
What do you think of the hit?
I thought it was a big body play. I didn't think it was dirty. I thought it was a big body play. It's unfortunate. It's a very large human being. Talking about Justin Advocator, who came in and bore down, and he was in an awkward position talking about Garrison. It's unfortunate. It really is. But did I think it was dirty? No, I did not.
We had a couple of those. Shane Doan on Chris Letang.
No, not dirty at all. This is a great lesson for all young players. Never relax, ever relax in an NHL game or any game when physical contact is permitted. Because Christopher let his guard down for a second. And because he did, Doan got him, and it was cleaned. It was not from behind. It was eyeball to eyeball, shoulder to shoulder, chest to chest, and he got him good.
I agree with you, but man, considering everything he's been through, it was really sad to see Letang in the state that he was in after that.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. But again, that's the lesson for young players. I felt terrible watching that. Did you see the reaction from Shane Doan?
Yeah.
He felt brutal about it. Shane Doan, he's an honor book. Like, I know he's had issues in Montreal, especially with the man that's now the mayor.
No. That's history.
Okay, and it was, okay.
It wasn't him. We know it wasn't him. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm just saying, I know there were issues there, and somebody made a mistake and misreported and everything else. But I can tell you this about Shane Doan. He is a man of honor. He is not a cheap shot artist. And you see what happened to him later in the game? He had to fight Downey because Downey challenged him, and Shane put Downey down.
Yeah.
But that's how it works in the league. I mean, that was not a dirty play. I felt terrible for Christopher Letang, though. I really did. I felt brutal about it.
All right, back to Garrison. They first initially feared he could be gone for the year, so it is three or four weeks. Tyler Johnson is day-to-day. Cedric Paquette is not also not as badly hurt as they initially thought he was. He probably won't play tonight. So in this respect, they're more vulnerable now than at any point this season, which is another reason why if the Canadiens are going to beat Tampa, tonight's a pretty good night to do it.
That's a good way to look at it. I would agree with that, especially coming off the 4-0 loss that obviously Tampa was involved with on Saturday against Detroit, and Detroit was full value in that game. We give them full credit on that one. But no, I would agree with you. I think there's something to be said about that. That's why I'm saying, listen, let's be honest, this is not total Tampa roster. But I do know this, and I stress this because I know people like to invent a lot of hatred and animosity between teams or disrespect. The one thing I know about Tampa, and I know this, really know this, they respect the Montreal Canadiens. They respect their brand. They respect the way they play. They respect their players, and they respect the fans of Montreal. I know that for a fact. I wouldn't tell you that about every team in the league, but I'll tell you that about Tampa.
We go into every game, I think, with the same mindset, and that's to take 2 points. I think can't worry about the past, can't worry about our opponent. I think we got to focus on our game. And that's when we have good results.
Max Pacioretty after the skate this morning with Pierre Maguire, Melnick in the afternoon, TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo.
And Pierre, there's this weird thing going on where, you know, Boston can't beat Montreal, and Montreal can't beat Tampa, and Tampa can't beat Boston, and around they go.
Yeah, right.
Tampa Bay lost to Boston 10 straight. They won their most recent meeting against Boston, but 10 in a row, Tampa Bay lost to the Boston Bruins. Is there anything the Canadiens can take away from the way the Bruins play against the Lightning and use it to their own advantage?
Probably not. Just a different situation. You got to be careful with that stuff. With Montreal, it's different strategic things that I would take, but I would use Montreal and how they defended against Detroit's power play. I think people can steal off of that. I would use Montreal and how they defended in the neutral zone against the Islanders, and I think people can steal off of that. But to say that, you know, you can steal off of Boston's system to beat Tampa, I don't know about that. I just think the way Boston's team is built is a lot different than the way Montreal's team is built.
Now, you mentioned the power play.
I mean, we've been anywhere from 13th to 16th, 17th in the league. Is that acceptable? Probably not for our standards, but there's still 15 teams below us in their percentage. So as bad as we're struggling, you know, 14 other coaches are scratching their head worse than we are.
Not in Buffalo, because they don't have nearly the firepower, and they're 30th. That's a good line from Don Cooper, by the way. The one thing I would say about Tampa, I think the right schematics are there. They've had some bad luck in terms of being unable to finish plays, but I really like the schematic of their power play. They do it a lot. Now, without Garrison, it changes a little bit because he's a huge hammer on the back end. He can bring some serious heat from the back end.
Petrie rips it off the skate. Here's Miller. Score! Down low, here's Galchenyuk with some options. Walks up front, and he roots it. He scores! He'll give it to Subban. Quickly down to Pierre-Marc. And Pacioretty scores! Now, Pierre, you've maintained that that eventually it will come. That is success on the power play for the Canadiens. All three goals. Technically, the first goal was not a power play goal, but Jimmy Hayes never got back in the play.
Correct.
So you could say all three goals, the Canadiens took advantage of the extra room on the ice. All three goals against Florida, including the game winner in overtime by Max Pacioretty. You don't know the answer to this. Nobody knows the answer to this. Canadians can only hope the answer is yes. Was that a turning point for the power play?
I would like to think so. That's why I've been so steadfast in my respect for the potential of the power play. The skill level is there. The right ammunition is there. But again, I think it comes down to finding sequences and creating gaps and creating space. And if they can do that and feel comfortable with it, then I think you can do well. But spacing is a huge part of power play success. And if you have the right spacing but you don't have success, then people don't have as much confidence in it. If you have the right spacing and you do have success, then all of a sudden the players start to say, this really works. So that's the key thing to watch for, is the spacing and how they set up in terms of moving the puck and where players are positioned.
Just another strange observation when it comes to the power play, Pierre. We know how they've struggled all year long. But if you look at the home-road split, it is fairly striking. They're hitting at a 21.6% success rate at the Bell Center. And we know how lethal they are generally as a team at home, because you look at their power play, it makes up for their below mediocre offense. Why is it not so transferable where they can take that kind of success and somehow duplicate it or come close to duplicating it away from the Bell Center?
I don't have the numbers on this, but I'd be willing to bet a big percentage of their goals are scored off the first 30 to 35 seconds of a power play, or maybe a little longer in terms of zone time. But it's because they have the chance to put their stick in second on the faceoff and win a lot of the original faceoff on the power play. And when you're on the road, you don't get the chance to do that, so it changes the whole dynamic. And if you lose that initial draw, it's 30 seconds, and then entries matter a ton. And if you're a smaller team, it's harder to get puck possession. I don't have the number on that, but I'd be willing to bet, just based on principle, that that's probably what's gone on, is that the advantage of the initial faceoff matters a lot for them.
Friday afternoon on Melnick in the Afternoon on this show, between 5:30 and 6.
His game has actually picked up with the Panthers. I think the fact that he's playing with two young players has brought an exuberance and enthusiasm that he might not have had with some of the other teams.
Panthers now only got 30 seconds left to work on the power play. Huberdeau dumps into the middle. Now Jágr, right wing circle, gets over the line, fires it, scores! Jágr with a power play goal! Huberdeau comes out of the pile and carries it right up the ice, gets to the red line, flips it over to Jágr on the left wing side. He winds, no, he fakes the shot. He scores! Jágr's got a huge pair! A huge, huge goal!
Well, I watched those goals. The stop and pop on Mark Methot in Ottawa, That's something that he's been doing for years. I used to skate with him all the time, so I know him. He and I spent a lot of time in the ice together, and he's always been really good at that. The goal on the wraparound, he learned that from Mario Lemieux, and you can see just how aware he is on it. You have to have extremely long arms, great edge control, and the ability to break down situations very quickly. Mario was as good as anybody in the history of the league at doing that, and I think Jaromir learned a lot from him just watching that.
That was Pete Mihaljevic on Friday, as you know, longtime scout, and more recently with Florida. And he was telling us that the Panthers had been after Jágr for a while. And the question we have, I thought he was I wasn't in the rink Saturday, but I watched it. I thought he was the best player on the ice Saturday at the Bell Center. And then we heard what he did in Ottawa yesterday. And, you know, with such an obvious, it seems, natural built-in chemistry with Thomas Plekanec, there are two things here. Number one, for whatever reason, the Canadians just did not want Jaromir Jágr. They don't believe in Jaromir Jágr. He's too old. He's too slow. Whatever. This management group that appears to be pretty sharp didn't want him. Or they just weren't willing to pay the price over the years to get Jaromir Jágr. Do you think if the latter is true, they're having second thoughts about it?
No, because they play a different system than Florida does. Their system's completely different, and maybe Jaromir doesn't fit into their system. Their system's more of a 1-2-2 trapping system, a little bit like what New Jersey's doing now. There's a reason why Jaromir didn't have huge numbers in New Jersey, because the 1-2-2 trapping system doesn't play to his strength. It doesn't. I coached the man. I helped draft him. I know his strengths and weaknesses. When you asked me, does he have game left, a lot like Mark Recchi, what did I tell you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I said, I guarantee you he has game. This guy go to the right system. So I give the Canadians a lot of credit on this. Everybody wants to knock him. Not a chance. They, you know, it's funny.
people are willing to tear down a team that's got over 100 points in the standings. There are a lot of situations in this league that would love to have over 100 points in the standings. This team has done a very good job talking about the Canadiens, and they understand their identity. Maybe the fans don't like it. Maybe the media doesn't like it, their identity I'm talking about. But they are a stalwart defensive team that has a very good goalie, and they play to the strength of their team right now. That's the system that they play.
Okay,
so it works for them.
But on the other hand, they are goal starved, and they've had issues on the power play. So you would think that Jágr would address that.
I would agree with you on that. But if you're going, I can also tell you, if you're going to bring in a player like that, your coaching staff better be very comfortable with that. Because he is a one-dimensional player.
Well, kind of like Vanek, right? Vanek a year ago.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. And listen, Thomas Vanek has 20 goals in Minnesota. Didn't start well for him, but he's got 20 goals right now. And I remember telling you, you'll see why I don't think Vanek will work. I remember telling you that. And it didn't work there.
It did work. It did work, and then it didn't work. It didn't work
when it mattered, I can tell you. It didn't work when it mattered, because that's not a system that's good for him. Just like I don't think the system of Montreal is good for Jágr. I just don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's a roller coaster ride right now. We've won a bunch, and then we've lost a couple here. But, the good news is we get right back at it on Tuesday again. We can't worry about this past three games. This weekend wasn't great for us, but hopefully Monday starts off for a good get off on the right foot.
Craig Anderson, after the loss, now is this it? Now that Boston has opened up a 3-point lead, or is there still going to be some more seesaw play here?
Tomorrow's a huge night, because they're obviously in Ottawa talking about, or Ottawa's in Detroit, sorry, and Boston's home to Florida. Boston wins, Ottawa loses, I'd be prepared to say right then and there it's over. But if it goes the other way, or if it's a 3-point game both on both sides, and you never know. But if there's that huge explosion and Ottawa pulls ahead by five, Boston pulls ahead by five and Ottawa loses in Detroit, then I think you got a huge problem if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, player, coach. I tell you this all the time, and I said on Ottawa radio today, three things you want to accomplish in a playoff series: concern, doubt, and fear. If you can implant those three things in the thinking of your opponent, they're in trouble. I think in Ottawa right now, there's concern, there's serious doubt, but they have not experienced fear yet. They lose tomorrow in Detroit, they will now feel fear, and then I think it's over.
Do you think there's a danger that there was just a little bit too much euphoria when they crossed that psychological barrier and got into the top eight, even though there were a couple weeks left to go?
No, I don't. This is part of why this puzzle is so hard to figure out. And I've used this as, and Mitch laughs at me all the time, as the Mendoza line, but my Mendoza line is double-digit points out at the All-Star break, and I think the only team that's done it is the 1993 Buffalo Sabres, since I've been doing this as a coach or a broadcaster or a scout, that's been able to overcome double-digit points at the All-Star break and make it to the playoffs. It is an amazingly difficult hurdle. And now you think about it, we've got a salary cap, we haven't had expansion in over a decade and a half, we've got obviously tremendous parity, we have the advent of the 3-point game. It is almost impossible to overcome a double-digit spread, just because it's so hard to win games. And you lose so much momentum if you just lose one game. But if you lose a 4-point game, it's more than 4 points now, because it's not just the 2 points of the game. It's more than that. It's also losing that game against an opponent that matters.
And Enstrom had trouble, lost his stick. Sharp on a breakaway over the jet line, down the slot. Chizzy scores! Patrick Sharp, who was born here in Winnipeg, just tied the score on a breakaway goal. Taves has it to Jalmerson, right point, lines, fires, they score! Jonathan Taves in front of the Jets net, got the stick on that puck and deflects it past Pavlik.
Isn't it something, Pierre, with the game on the line, the two guys, two veteran winners born in Winnipeg, pull it out for the Chicago Blackhawks?
Well, Nicholas Jalmerson made a heck of a play on the Taves goal, and obviously some bad luck for Winnipeg on the Sharp goal in terms of the defender falling down. But, I think the biggest thing is that for Winnipeg, they're for real. That was a real robust game they played in Chicago last night. I watched it. They deserve a lot of credit. I think their team is really well-positioned going forward. for Chicago, they had to have that. They had not been playing well. I don't think it's any secret. They've had huge issues offensively. They've had some defensive issues. But listen, both those teams are good. They're both more than capable of going on a long run if they make the playoffs. I think Chicago will. I think there's a real good chance Winnipeg will.
That was a fun game to watch. Real fun game to watch.
Absolutely,
the atmosphere
agree.
In Winnipeg, it's great. And that's why I'm rooting. I want to see the Winnipeg Jets in the playoffs.
So I do too. I told my boss at NBC, I want Winnipeg in. I want to do the first game in Winnipeg Arena. I really do. I want to do. I really do. I just respect the people there and their crowd so much. And I think it'll just be an amazing TV event. I really do. So I hope they make it as well. And I don't care. I don't cheer for any team, but I hope they make it. The one thing I would say, though, Mitch, and I think this is really important, you see how hard teams are battling to get in. I just don't know how much people are going to have left. These teams like Calgary, Winnipeg, Los Angeles, just to try to make it, Ottawa, Boston, Florida, the teams that are the lower part of the standings, they're having to put out so much just to try to get in. This is one of those years I just don't know how much they're going to have left.
Yeah, good point. A lot of those teams are doing it with significant injuries. Final one, Pierre. How many games has Andrei Markov missed since returning from the back-to-back knee injuries, Mitch Gallo?
1 in 3 years.
And that was a healthy scratch. They rested him.
Yes.
He's the Canadiens nominee for the Masterton.
What a nice honor. What a good person. What a tremendous career. Really happy for him. Happy for the Canadians. Happy they kept him. Obviously, it's just been a roller coaster because of the injury situation, but he's a professional. He is a true example of a professional hockey player.
We will talk again tomorrow. Enjoy the games tonight.
Mitch, did you get a chance to watch any of San Jose and Pittsburgh last night?
I don't know if I've ever seen a double minor in overtime killed off the way the Penguins did.
That was one of those things where if you're a coach in the league, you say there's effort, and then there's championship effort. And what you saw from Maxime LeCaire, Robbie Scuderi, and Craig Adams in particular, and a little bit of good luck off the right post from Joe Thornton, but when you watch that, you say this is what a champion has to do to be successful. This is what champions do. Those guys were fantastic. That was a defining moment, I think, of the Penguins season. I really do.
Yeah, Patrick Hornquist got the double minor. They killed it off and won the game in a shootout.
Yep.
Always a Penguin. Thank you, Pierre.
Yeah.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.